week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Happy Friday and happy International Women's Day. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Ladies first on International Women's Day. Kenyan athletes Valerie Jemeli and Viseline Jepkesho are two of the favorites in Sunday's Nagoya Women's Marathon in Japan. With Japan preparing to host next year's Olympics in Tokyo, an impressive field of women will test their speed and endurance in Nagoya, about 370 kilometers southwest of the Japanese capital. The Kenyans Jemeli and Jepkesho have the top personal best in the Nagoya Marathon field. Jemeli has a personal best time of 2 hours, 20 minutes, and 53 seconds. And Jepkesho's best marathon time is 2 hours, 21 minutes, and 37 seconds. The field for the Nagoya Women's Marathon also includes Ethiopia's Meseret Defar, a two-time Olympic champion and two-time world champion on the track at 5,000 meters. Now 35 years old, Meseret made her marathon debut last year in the Netherlands, where she clocked 2 hours, 27 minutes, and 25 seconds, and finished 8th in the Amsterdam Marathon. It'll be interesting to see how Meseret runs in Nagoya and whether she can win the title. Another African runner who will be on the starting line in Nagoya is the Namibian Helalia Johannes, who won the 2018 Commonwealth Games Women's Marathon title in 2 hours, 32 minutes, and 40 seconds. Now let's go to London, where the Vitality Half Marathon will be in the spotlight on Sunday. The four-time Olympic champion on the track, Mo Farah of Britain, will line up against the Kenyan duo of Wilson Kipsang, former world record holder in the marathon, and the 2017 London Marathon winner, Daniel Wanjiru. The event will be significant for more than one reason, as the energetic Andy Edwards reports from London.
Mo Farah's win in the Chicago Marathon last October established him once and for all among the top flight of marathon runners. He ran a European record of 2:05.11, and while that is over 3 minutes slower than Eliud Kipchoge's world record in Berlin last September, Farah in a championship race should be a strong contender where super-fast times are not the priority. For Farah and his Kenyan opponents, Wilson Kipsang and Daniel Wanjiru, Sunday's race over the half marathon will offer a taste of how each is preparing for the London Marathon on April 28. Wanjiru won the London title 3 years ago, and that is the biggest achievement of his career so far. Kipsang is the former world record holder, having run 2:03.13 in Berlin in 2016. But the rise of Eliud Kipchoge has overshadowed every other rival, including as fine a competitor as Wilson Kipsang. He looked almost stunned by Kipchoge's world record marathon in Berlin last September, despite delivering a solid performance himself.
That place and running 2:06, it's really good, despite the fact that I really prepared for a world record. I think the body determines a lot. During the race day, you just wake up, you feel the body doesn't respond to a certain pace, so you just have to maintain and you give it all.
When Eliud Kipchoge crossed the Berlin finish line in 2:01.39, every other elite marathon runner would have felt transposed to an inferior level. Kipsang was generous in his praise for Kipchoge's performance, but will it act as a spur, or, on the other hand, remind him and every rival that they are now running for second?
To smash the world record by 1 minute around 18 seconds is really such incredible, because always guys brings down by maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds, or 40 seconds, but for him, I think he really prepared himself for so much, and he has been attempting so much, so close, going so close, and I think this was his day. And it will really give a very big challenge to athletes.
At the half marathon distance, Daniel Wanjiru is the fastest of the trio by a slim margin. But Kipsang's best time was set 10 years ago. For that reason, Mo Farah looks the favourite, as he readies himself for the supreme test of facing Eliud Kipchoge in the London Marathon in 6 weeks. The Vitality Half Marathon reflects the modern world of mass participation running as well, with over 15,000 expected to take part, starting at Tower Bridge. It barely warrants a mention these days that many women will be running, both in a strong elite field and among the mass runners. But given that today, Friday, March the 8th, is International Women's Day, it's worth remembering that this was not always the case. In Opportunity and Attitude, women's participation in athletics and road running has been transformed in the past four decades. Almost 39 years ago, the City of London was host to the Avon International Women's Marathon, one of the first races for elite women only. 200 women from 27 countries competed in August 1980, and the race was won by Lorraine Moller of New Zealand, who was based in the USA for many years. Those women were truly groundbreakers for the sport. This is Andy Edwards for the Sunny Side of Sports in London.
Thanks, Andy. It sounds like it will be a great race in the British capital on Sunday. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Helen Maroulis made history at the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, where she became the first ever American to win a gold medal in women's freestyle wrestling. I caught up with Helen by telephone after her Olympic triumph. On International Women's Day, let's listen in again as I say, Helen, welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If we look back, historic moment for USA Wrestling, you won the first ever gold medal for the United States in women's wrestling. How has your life changed since that moment?
It's definitely different now. I went from extreme training to like running around in media and going to lots of professional sports games and interviews, and it's been such a blast.
I did check out your Facebook page, Helen, and I saw a photo of you with the baseball great Cal Ripken. I guess that was one of your sporting events that you mentioned. And you said you kind of picked his brain for tips on maintaining a competitive edge. What did Cal give you any good pointers?
Yeah, Cal is, from the brief couple, minutes I got to pick his brain about it, you can tell he's been so successful for a reason. He just seems so smart. I wanted to keep asking questions. I just asked him a little bit about the balancing, training and competing with media obligations or wanting to be in the public eye and give back and have time for that while at the same time prioritizing training. Because for myself, the deal that I made with myself is that nothing will compare to a gold medal these 4 years. And these 4 years, I'm going to give myself to sacrifice everything. So I said no to a lot of camps and clinics, and I felt bad about that a lot of times because I'm like, man, I really want to give back, and I know it'd be great to go to these camps and clinics for girls' programs, but at the same time, I just thought if I spread myself too thin, you know, and I don't achieve this goal, it's not going to be worth it. Whereas if I just, you know, go 100 miles an hour and dedicate myself to this goal and then I have a gold medal, then these next 4 years I can give more of myself and a lot more time to reaching out to young kids and young girls and everything. And so obviously I plan to wrestle for the next 4 years, and I do want it to be different than it was the last four. I do want to be available more for those young girls and to inspire them and just to promote wrestling to begin with. So I just asked Kale, I'm like, for someone to have been in the sport for so many years, I'm like, how did you, you know, balance all of that? And it was really interesting to hear his response.
Helen, you talk about being an inspiration for young girls, and I look at that Team USA Olympic team, and you were definitely one of the stars. Simone Biles, she earned headlines, Katie Ledecky. I think more than half the team was made up of female athletes. Did it feel like a special team in that regard?
Yeah, you know, I really wanted to meet them, actually. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, Katie Ledecky did the Nationals game the night before I did. And so I'm like, man. But it's just been so awesome, and to see where they are in the media and what they're doing, and to just put female in athletics, you know, on the map, and to really, you know, show girls that you can do anything. And it's like funny, you have, you know, what is, I think Simone is 4'9 or 4'10, and this Jack little girl, and then Katie Ledecky's tall. And so it's like really cool to just see, just to show girls that, you know, that you can do whatever. You can choose any sport, from gymnastics to wrestling to swimming, and it's been really awesome.
Helen, can you take our Voice of America listeners back to that medal ceremony in Rio? How did you feel when you had the gold medal placed around your neck?
It was surreal. It was very emotional. It's like everything that you work for, and it's been my dream for 17 years. Many times you don't see any payback for the investments that you make, but getting that gold medal, to me, I'm like, everything was worth it. You know, the times I didn't succeed, all the sacrifices that I had to make, and then just being reminded of my family and everything that they've done and sacrificed for me and my coaches, and I'm receiving this medal, and it's like all of us, this group effort. So it's awesome.
In the final, you beat Japan's Saori Yoshida 4-1, and I was reading some of the reports. You really showed a lot of respect to Yoshida. You know, you said you were honored to wrestle her. Many say she's the greatest female wrestler of all time. What are your thoughts on Yoshida?
Oh, my gosh. She's an incredible, incredible athlete. And, yeah, I mean, it really was an honor to wrestle her. I just remember thinking, you know, I'm like, just don't retire before I get to wrestle you. Not to prove anything or anything like that, but it's like, here's this legend in the sport. And I'm like, if I don't get to wrestle her, it's just going to be, you know, she's you know, in history for being one of the greatest wrestlers for all of time. And, like, it's just so cool to be wrestling in the same time while she's still competing. And so I'm like, I've always wanted that opportunity to wrestle her once more. And especially with all the scouting and everything that I did, I know I almost lost to North Korea. And I just thought, man, I spent so many hours focusing on Yoshida. If I don't get to wrestle her, this is going to just feel terrible. So I really wanted to I just wanted the honor to compete with her. And I do think, I mean, she's so respectful. And after I won in 2015, you know, we won at different weights, and she came up to me the next day and shook my hand. And at the 2014 World Cup, you know, I got to talk to her a little bit at the banquet. And it's just one of those things. She's so nice to everyone, whether you're in her weight class or not in her weight class. And it's just like, how can you not respect somebody like that?
You talk about scouting Yoshida. I read another report that said you even studied some of her videos in Japanese to try to get inside her head. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't learn Japanese. I translated some of her interviews because, you know, she only wrestled at the World Championships. So she's pretty much wrestling, you know, once a year. And I'm like, that's just not enough to be able to study someone and the techniques that they're doing. And so, you know, I went back even from 2004 when she wrestled, and it was like, okay, I see she's winning. Her techniques are changing. So what is it that keeps her consistently winning? And that had to be the mental part. So I'm like, I need to figure out how she thinks. And so I just translated some interviews, and I'm sure now somebody can figure out how I think from the amount of talking that I've done. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It helps give you insight into somebody.
Yoshida from Japan, and Japan will host the 2020 Olympics. I guess we'll see you in Tokyo.
Well, you know, I plan to obviously go for Tokyo, but I don't want to be in the mindset that that's my spot, you know, that I have it locked, because I don't. I have to earn it. There's a lot of nationals and trials and world championships to fight for. So I definitely want to go for 2020.
That's Olympic champion wrestler Helen Maroulis of the United States. And that interview originally aired on The Voice of America in 2016. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Helen talked about Saori Yoshida, the great Japanese wrestler who she beat in the final in Rio de Janeiro. The 36-year-old Yoshida, a three-time Olympic champion, announced her retirement from wrestling in January 2019. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten joins us now with a look at a chess academy in Uganda that's helping disabled children master the game. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In 2016, a film called Queen of Katwe was released that told the true story of Fiona Mutesi, a Ugandan girl who was introduced to the game of chess. She goes on to play for Uganda in the 2010 Chess Olympiad in Russia, and the man behind her success is mentor and coach Robert Katende. In 2004, Katende created the SOM Chess Academy, the inspiration for the film. Katende says he chose the game of chess to help encourage children from impoverished communities and those with disabilities to develop cognitive thinking skills. And he says children with disabilities in particular can benefit from the game.
Where I want them to go is to see that I can build their self-esteem, to see that their hopes have been inspired and restored, and also to see that they have what to offer in the society. Disability is not a curse, it's not inability. They can still make it irrespective of. That's why I said, okay, we are doing the same thing but in a different way. So that's why I call them, you are differently abled, but you can still thrive.
The players call themselves the Pioneers, and the SOM Chess Academy has led several of them from the streets of Kampala to the international competitive stage, like 17-year-old pioneer Sharif Mbazira. Sharif contracted polio as a baby, which left him with limited movement in his limbs. He started playing chess 5 years ago while still in primary school, and Sharif says in the beginning, people had doubts about his ability to play.
Before I started to play chess, at home they were not believing me. They were knowing I'm disabled completely. Like other people, they are going to go on load, begging money, so on. And for me, I said, okay, you believe what you know, but for me, I believe in myself.
And because of his self-belief, last year he boarded a plane to America and represented Uganda at the World Junior Chess Championship for the Disabled and won a bronze medal.
I won a trophy and the medal. I brought it back at home. Many people, they were not accepting what they have done there. And that's how my life changed. Now I go to school without any problem. I do what I want because of that chess. Because if you play chess and if you gain your point, many things come better on your side.
Sharif is enrolled at the Kampala School for the Physically Disabled. He's taking a course in information and communications technology, and of course, he is a member of their chess club. Another pioneer at the academy is Amos Mwesigwa, who believes mastering the game of chess will lead him to a better life.
If I keep playing chess, I become a chess master, I will have enough money to satisfy my needs, to buy a car, to build a house, and to help as a disabled person who are like me.
Uganda's Ministry of Health says about 2 million civilians in the country live with a disability, and many live in impoverished communities with limited access to education and health care. But Robert Katende says his program helps empower students to become leaders in their communities.
We are having so many social challenges, but the way the kids are growing up, they have not been given an opportunity to be self-reliant, to take personal decisions, to be accountable to their actions. Now, when they come to the chess game, the philosophy of Som Chess Academy and the Robert Katende Initiative basically is to use chess as a platform to instill these concepts into the lives of these kids so that we can be able to nurture the life skills required for them to be successful.
The SOM Chess Academy has centers in 5 different communities in Kampala, and children can become pioneers at no charge. And that's all for me, and that ends the week. I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. You have a good weekend, too. I enjoyed that pioneering chess report. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. On International Women's Day, how about some African women's football news? Nigeria's women's coach, the Swedish tactician Thomas Dennerby, says his team learned some good lessons at the recent Cyprus Cup tournament. The Super Falcons of Nigeria finished 7th out of 12 teams at the week-long competition, a warm-up for the FIFA Women's World Cup in France. The Super Falcons finished with 2 wins and 2 losses. After a 4-1 loss to Austria in their opening match, the Nigerian women edged Slovakia 4-3, lost to Belgium 1-0, and then defeated Thailand 3-0 in the 7th-place match. Speaking after the tournament, Coach Dennerby said, and I quote, "We lost to Austria, but we recovered well against Slovakia, and it's a good thing that we won our final match. I'm happy that we were able to come to Cyprus and participate." South Africa also participated at the Cyprus Cup and finished 10th out of 12 teams. The South Africans finished with 1 draw and 3 losses. South Africa opened with a 2-2 draw against Finland, then lost to tournament champion North Korea 4-1, lost to the Czech Republic 2-1, and in a rematch against Finland, lost 3-0. South Africa's head coach, Desiree Ellis, says the results didn't come, but her team wasn't as bad as the results showed. Coach Ellis says she used a lot of new players, and in her words, "We dominated in all areas except the scoreboard. Our movement with and without the ball was much better, but at this level, the smallest mistake you make is punished." South Africa, like Nigeria, used the Cyprus Cup to prepare for the Women's World Cup. The International Women's Tournament kicks off in France on June 7th in Paris, and will conclude with the final on July 7th in Lyon. Nigeria is grouped with Norway, South Korea, and host France for the first round of the Premier Women's Tournament. South Africa, meanwhile, is grouped with Spain, China, and 2-time Women's World Cup champion Germany. The indomitable Lionesses of Cameroon will also represent Africa at the Women's World Cup. Cameroon is grouped with Canada, New Zealand, and the Netherlands in the first round. The United States is the defending Women's World Cup champion. And that wraps up the March 8th International Women's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. On our next science edition of Press Conference USA, we'll talk about Ebola, the current outbreak of the virus in the Democratic Republic of Congo, as well as a new medication that shows great promise in treating all three deadly strains of the Ebola virus. That's the science edition of Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists theorize the sun will begin to die in about 5 billion years when it expands into a red giant. 5 billion years later, the sun is expected to exhaust the last of its nuclear fuel, leaving behind its small, dense, and hot core, which is called a white dwarf. Once the white dwarf completely cools, trillions of years later, our sun will become a cold and lifeless object known as a black dwarf. Astronomers from England's University of Warwick say that data from the European Space Agency's Gaia satellite provided them with direct evidence that white dwarfs form crystal cores of metallic oxygen and carbon. The researchers say this crystallization slows down its aging process, lengthening the time before it would become a black dwarf. A study outlining the research and findings has been published by the journal Nature. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, what's behind the Yellow Vests or Gilets Jaunes movement in France? What began as demonstrations against the rise in gasoline tax morphed into a rallying cry against French President Emmanuel Macron. We'll talk with regional analysts about the implications of the Gilets Jaunes movement. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Tune
Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information. VOA.
This is VOA.